720 WGN. Right. It is Dane in for Matt Bubala until 5 a.m. today. Gino Tiberi to my right, Jess Rains. And with Wellen, we've revisited the glory days of his Hungry Hippo championships. And of course, you know, that in the days before.
Sanctioned champion.
In the days before, you know, cable television and unlimited satellites and all that kind of stuff, you know, to be the cover person, the main, the physical embodiment of the Operation game, which was a huge, huge, huge hit. That's some pretty heavy street cred. Yeah,
not many people can have that claim to fame, but apparently our own Roger Badish does.
Yeah, well, I've got the only trophy. They shut it down. They shut the action down shortly thereafter. I've never been able to defend my championship. That was quite a number of years ago.
Oh, man.
Who knew?
He was the influence for such a successful game.
And that game was tough. Here's the reasons why it was tough. You can think about this. You know, kids, you know, you'd improvise over time and you'd just deal with things. And batteries were an elusive, mysterious thing. When I was a kid, you could get a toy and it would have batteries with it. And then typically when they would go out, you were kind of on your own. And
Mom, can you get me some batteries? Oh, you only got the two that came with the doll. That's it.
Well, so for Operation, it would be the point where we would play, but we didn't have the battery any. So his little nose didn't turn red. Nothing happened. So we'd have to have somebody.
Did you have the designated? Is that what you were going to say?
Well, we would have a person that would decide, hey, or honor system, which rarely worked, right? Like, no, I didn't.
I thought you had the guy sitting off on the side who the only job he had was bzzz. Wait a minute. Is that a... Yep.
Looks like he got up. He hit the sidewall. No, that's it.
Roger, you know, you may be right there. We may have built in the whole, like a little bit of the noise. Otherwise, it was like, hey, you know. Maybe a bzzz.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know
that game was hard. And then here's the thing, too, is you would, just like you brought up Barrel of Monkeys, you know, we had a very, very sad and getting sadder all the time, clinically depressed Barrel of Monkeys, that over time you only had like two escape? Monkeys. Yeah, well, right, you didn't have them.
Yeah, they got out and ran away.
It wasn't even a barrel of monkeys. It was bottom of the barrel of monkeys.
They came over and started taunting Roger on
this monkey business, you know.
So for Operation, we would inevitably lose the bones. We would have to throw other items in there. Yeah.
Couldn't even throw me a bone. Yeah. Jeez.
And so.
Who knew the cross? These cross.
And since at the time, guys, I did not own a 3D printer, I could not make an additional,
man,
like funny bone. And so you have like a, I don't know if it was like a, just a, it wasn't like a piece of food, but maybe like a paper. I don't know what it was. So you throw something that fit
in there.
A
piece of toast that fell in while you were eating it over the game.
You know, I wonder, I know they wanted to keep the cost down, but. They should have added some sort of adapter for those games where you didn't need to get a battery if you didn't want one. You know, you throw a plug in there.
The fine folks at Duracell would beg to differ.
Well, sure, yeah, of course they would. But back then.
They send that rabbit after you.
You wouldn't have lost all the pieces, and Roger would have been illuminated like and not shut off.
Yeah. Exxon Mobil folks saying, yeah, electric cars. You know,
could have put like a crank on the sign. You wind it up like a Victrola.
And it would go for another half an hour.
Yeah.
You know,
that'd be cool.
Roger, you're the enemy of the corporate.
I'm the one that started it, not him.
Well, I'm supporting you. Yeah, Dina, you guys, you were the Ed Begley Jr.'s before his time. All right, here's the thing. Is a guy that knows more about Ed Begley Jr.'s career and the powerful impact that he's had.
More than he needs to know.
on the world of, I don't know if he's ever even been in a movie. I know, of course, been in some TV shows.
Oh, he's been in movies before.
Is the one and only, and he needs a proper introduction. You know, there's so many ways. This is the time where he's up all night. He's just caffeinated. They're administering all sorts of adrenaline shots to him because it's just nonstop excitement as we close in towards another amazing Oscars celebration and of course the awards. The one and only blockbuster Blake Stubbs. Blake, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. Yes, I am caffeinated, but I have a nice glass of ice water next to me just to make sure I stay hydrated and ready to go.
You got the chaser?
At a moment's notice. I'm here to. It's my coffee chaser, so to speak.
That's the one that slows him down after he's been going for a while.
Yes, and you are correct. Like, this is a very stressful weekend for me because, like, I'm trying to see everything possible that I need. Because, look, I mean, when you get down to the Oscar stuff, you always run into like things like the short animated feature, you know, films and the short live action films. And if you're lucky, there are theaters that will, you know, batch those all together and let you go see them for like a very, you know, reasonable price. But like trying to get a hold of things, because some of this stuff is available online. And, you know, like I'm trying to use every spare minute I can so that when I walk into Oscar Sunday, I'm ready to go. Because it's a big day for me. What? And I don't bet money on it, but I love being, you know, the guy that knows it.
Well, here's the thing, too, right? Because you got to have your hand on the pulse of so much of it, and there could be an errant question from somebody that says, like, hey, what about that, you know, best foreign film dubbed in animated animal feature? You know, and then you've got to know all of those categories, and it isn't always, you know, easy to have your hand on the pulse of each and every one of those, but you do it. And here's the other thing too, is you are that guy with your predictions, and you'll be on with our good mutual friend John Hansen tomorrow, because Blake doesn't stop, and you'll be going through some of those predictions and all of that Oscar stuff. Is you're the guy that predicts, I don't want to say the apocalyptic end of the world, but maybe that earthquake, right? And you want to be right. You want to know it all.
I do. You know, I just recently did a podcast with a friend of mine who does this for fun. He loves films. And every year he tries to bring me in to talk about strictly Best Picture, the Best Picture category in its entirety. So what we do is we do this long form sort of, you know, breakdown, give every film about 30 minutes, you know, a fair shake. And then at the end, we sort of break it down in terms of ranking, like how we felt about them. And look, that takes hours to produce because you want to give every film equal footing. And you want to make sure that, you know, first of all, we've seen every film, because you can't go into that sort of discussion and not have, you know, the wherewithal to hold your own in every aspect of it. But at the same time, like I'm sitting here watching this stuff. And this year, particularly, Best Picture is a very tough category. Probably the toughest it's been since, I would say, about 2009, when they instituted this whole, like, up to 10 nominees in the category rule, where they changed the whole scope of how that category works. And I'm really excited for Oscar Sunday because of that. Because, you know, I mean, in the last few years, there's been some controversy. There was the Oscar So White controversy. There's been, you know, not enough women are being nominated in categories that they should be, and rightfully so. Et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it goes on, and you can fall down this slippery slope of what they've done wrong. Whereas this year, there is a very wealthy, like, palette of films that, you know, audience members of every type of, you know, preference and taste of what they want to see and what they should see, even more so, like stuff that they should have access to. It's on display. It's ready for you to go see it. And it's a good time to go to the movies at this point in time of year. And, Oscar Sunday is Sunday, but up till now, you've had every opportunity to maybe get out there and see something that you otherwise would miss or not, you know, give a fair shake to.
Yeah, it's cool because, you know, you look at sometimes there are years and you kind of hit on it, Blake, that, you know, there's a foregone conclusion. There's some movie that's just taking the world by storm, or some actor, it's their time, or, you know, and it just feels like that, you know, these are human beings that are voting on it. The vibe is just there that this is your winner. And you'll have a lot of, you know, pundits come out and say, like, hey, this is what's going to happen. It's nice to see it be kind of wide open, right? And there's a nice kind of group of pictures. I know you're going to talk with John at length about a lot of those things, so we don't want to take too much of the thunder away from that. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about, now the Oscars is the kind of thing that you've been covering since, I know your mom, she would hold her abdomen, right, when Blake was in the womb, right, up to the screen, which was then a nice warm tube television, and so you could get in some of that, because she didn't want you missing anything
through osmosis. She knew
that your cinematic destiny, but the Oscars itself has always been, and you kind of, again, you touched on a little bit of it, that it's this place not only to highlight America's great films and its great actors, but also social consciousness, you know, whatever kind of the issues of the day are, you know, some of these very important things that are happening in society, and some of the Oscar presentations have been places for that. So when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about some of the biggest Oscars of all time. And also too, here's the thing, you think the movie's going to be great and that's why it's getting nominated, but sometimes an Oscar nod can kind of give birth to an entire life and audience for a film, and certainly for an actor, that it didn't have. We'll talk about some of those through history as well. So hold tight, Blake. We're going to get right back to you. It's Dane in for Matt here on 720 WGN. I don't know if I hear clapping. Maybe there is some in there somewhere.
No, this is gorillas. No Oh, that's Clapping. Right.
720 WGN. It is Dane in for Matt Bubala until 5 a.m. today. I do have Dino Tiberi to my right. Jess Raines spinning the hits in the booth. And when it comes to hits in the movie world, this is their night to shine and be recognized for all time. It is a historical thing, and it's the kind of thing that once your film or your acting role is certainly, I think, even nominated, but when you win an Oscar, for the rest of your life, you'll be introduced as an Oscar winner, a guy with his hand on the pulse of so much of it. To talk about some of the greatest Oscar moments throughout history is on the line with the one and only our guy, Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, of course. This is a big time of year for me. I'm a huge nerd, as far as it goes, for the Oscars. Films in general, of course. But I think it goes without saying that whether you agree with how the awards have been handed out over the last few years or in their entirety, the history of the entire awards ceremony, the Oscars have always been held as the highest accolade one can earn in this industry that is filmmaking, for either acting or makeup and hairstyling or directing or writing or producing. You know what I mean? It's the pinnacle. It's what everybody wants. Everybody wants that little gold dude that they can put on their toilet so that when their guests show up, they can say, yeah, I want an Oscar. And some people have won tons of Oscars and you can't name them.
And you can't even get into their bathroom.
Right. Yeah. No, you can't. It's lock and key. But some have also been nominated, more times than Susan Lucci ever was for Emmys and never won. It's such a unique and interesting approach to the way things are awarded. Because, again, when you win an Oscar, or you're even, I believe, if you're even nominated for an Oscar, you're a member of the Academy and you can vote, and your vote counts for who wins or who doesn't win the following year. So it's this ever-growing and evolving system, and at times it's been taken to task for being outdated, and it needs to update its rules. I believe in the last few years it's done a pretty good job of doing that.
Blake, I wanted to get your thoughts on this, because you mentioned it too, is that it is, it is the highest kind of award and recognition that you can have, but there are certain either categories of filmmaking that have received high praise, but just won't be in line. Yes. Based on just kind of the traditional ways that the Academy and its voters go about accepting. And so let's say if you're, if you're doing an action film or a comedy or something like that, and some of those are very well done and I think Oscar worthy, but it doesn't seem like they ever get the nods. Like, what's your thoughts on that? Just how they choose the roles and what kind of movies typically find themselves nominated for Oscars?
Well, I think that in the past, there's always the exception to the rule. You mentioned comedies, for example, is a big one. For me, A Fish Called Wanda is always going to be the exception to the rule. The Oscars have sort of not given the fair due to the comedic world of filmmaking. And sometimes comedy sends the biggest message. It reaches the biggest audience. It has the biggest impact. In that particular film, A Fish Called Wanda, Kevin, Kline won Best Supporting Actor in that film for a comedic role. And this is, I've seen this man live. I saw him play Cyrano in New York on Broadway, and he is probably, pound for pound, the finest actor I've ever seen play anything. But he played a comedic role, and that was sort of a departure from what the Academy is used to awarding. I think that this year you have what I would call, they're not front-facing, punchline-oriented comedies, but the likes of Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which I would call a dark comedy, or Get Out, which I would call a horror comedy, but more in the end on the line of horror in a lot of ways. But at the same time, it's still outlandishly funny, what needs to be, because of its brilliance. They are in the Best Picture category. So on occasion, the Academy gets it right, and they sort of, branch out, and they welcome in different elements of filmmaking. But in the past, they have. You said it. And I mean, you could go through, we're at the 90th, you could go through a lot of years of different times where the Academy is just flat out ignored great comedic types of films. And that is something that I think they've grown to appreciate a bit more, but it's slow. It's always been a slow burn with that.
And it seems like, too, there are certain people that are I think, comedic people, you know, that are thought of as funny guys or ladies that sort of are right. in the club. And I'm doing the air quotes here, where they're sort of, you know, like a Tom Hanks, right? It's the kind of guy yeah. that, you know, he's known as a funny person, obviously an incredible actor, but he's sort of, you know, he's a guy that they can accept that can do this. The other side of it too, and, you know, oftentimes we have talked, you love Die Hard, you love action films. Who doesn't, right? You know,
I do.
A well done yeah. movie can be, and some of them are great, and I would consider them to be on the acting side, certainly just on the success side. And I don't know how you even qualify. I know they've got different categories for special effects, but Oscar worthy for sure. the action movies. And action movies typically don't find themselves, you know, winning that award on that night.
They really don't. And again, if you go into get this year Best Picture category, I'm just going to pull out a particular film, Dunkirk. A World War II film that is set around an incredibly, you know, epic in terms of its scale, wartime event that has incredibly kinetic editing, which I actually, if we're just going to throw out a couple of little minor predictions here, I think that, and I shouldn't say minor because it's a very specific craft, but I think Dunkirk is a strong candidate for best editing and best cinematography this year. I don't know if it'll win cinematography, but I think it falls in that category of like creating this chaotic and enveloping, you know, environment where audience members could have sat in an IMAX theater and felt like they were there. They created that, and they did it excellently. And Hans Zimmer's work on the score, I think, only elevated that even further. So, like, a war film is the kind of action film that would be considered. You know, Saving Private Ryan is another one. Yep. It didn't win Best Picture. It lost to Shakespeare in Love, but it should have been considered, and a great many people, myself included, I know, would have argued that Shakespeare in Love should not have won Best Picture that year, and it probably should have been either Saving Private Ryan or potentially Life is Beautiful, depending on the camp that you belong in. But at the same time, you know, a war film is the type of action film that they would, you know, appeal to, as opposed to an action film like a Die Hard.
You know, some of these movies, and you think about them, they are the kind that just stick with you, that you'll remember kind of where you were when you saw it for the first time. You know, it's like a Saving Private Ryan is one of those right. that I think falls into that category. And also too, is there's a way to go about, you almost need kind of a tour guide on how to best right. present your film for Oscar consideration. There's a way to do it, kind of almost like a political campaign. There's a way to do it and there's a way not to do it. You got to know the ropes in there if you want to get that thing done.
No, and that's actually very true. For those that are not in the know on how the Academy does things, and again, unless you open it up and read the criteria, you're not going to know. The easiest way to explain it is that when these films play in a theater, they have to play in a certain number of theaters to be even considered level one. That's the first tier of criteria. The second tier is they have to have a lot of money taken out for ads, and you might have seen these around the internet. They're called four-year consideration. That is a base criteria to allow something to be nominated for an Academy Award. That requires a lot of money. That requires studio backing, studio marketing. They have to be ready to pursue that when the film hits and gets the buzz that it so rightly, you know, probably deserves. And, you know, look, hey, people who make these movies know if they're good or not. So the studios that are backing them or have produced them are ready to say, hey, you know what? For an example would be Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. They know that the likes of, you know, a Sam Rockwell and a Frances McDormand are going to be nominated for, or should be nominated for Best Actress, Best Supporting Actor and Best Actress respectively. So they're going to champion that. Anything else they get, maybe, and I'm just throwing this out hypothetically, maybe a means of them saying, look, hey, if we're going to go like, for these two categories, we should go for all of them. And now the film is nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Original Screenplay, Best Cinematography. Do you see what I'm saying? Like this sort of snowballs. But a lot of money goes into just getting these films considered for nomination. So sometimes people, you know, when the nominations are released, they get upset and they say, oh, this movie that I love, that was one of my favorites all year, wasn't even considered. What those people may not know, and I will admit, I was one of these people many years ago. I had no clue. They don't know that there's strict criteria that the Academy has to make sure films and studios that produce them adhere to even be considered, and then make sure that you're even on a ballot to be nominated and then maybe potentially win an Oscar.
Yeah.
It's a lot of, there's a lot of holes and a lot of loops and a lot of, you know, just ladders you got to climb to make sure that you fit that criteria.
And then sometimes it is, it's, you know, you feel like you've got the thing that's going on this year. You've got every, but then there's other people in line that maybe, right. You brought up Susan Lucci, and we also know she's great. I think some of her best work was done on those progressive or insurance ads. I think she's so funny. Anyway, but obviously she was, you know, great and deserving of an award. And you think about kind of this whole strategic campaign like a Leonardo DiCaprio did with The Revenant. I mean, that was like where you get the buzz out, you do the thing, you have everybody, and it's a foregone conclusion that this is what exactly he made that movie specifically to win that Oscar so that he could go to the bathroom and have it sitting right next to him. When we got to take a break and get to some news. When we come back, we're going to spend a tiny bit more time with you, Blake, if we can. We want to get some of those, you know, a couple amazing moments in Oscar history. We talked about some early on in the program. Then we want to get your favorite game of all time too. So stay tuned for that. Right now, though, it is Roger was the body for Operation.
That's right.
So it's straight up 3 o'clock right now. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is straight up 3 o'clock news time. Here's Roger Badish. And Roger in the News was brought to us by Chocolate Wine and Spirits Expo.com.
No diggity, no doubt.
There's no clapping. I think we've transitioned into a tambourine. These are all tambourine songs. Thank you, Jess Rains.
I like how you did the announcement of the sponsor, and right after you said it, they went, mm-hmm.
That's what you want, especially if it's a food-related one. That's what you want people saying. You don't want people saying, like, ugh. Yuck. Yeah. 720 WGN, it is Dane in for Matt Bubala until 5 a.m. here in the Allstate Showcase Studio. And on the line with us, we've got he is prepping in Command Central, many monitors up. He's got schematics, whiteboards. He's in a lab coat. He's doing research and development as we prepare for yet another Oscars coming up. And Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, welcome back to WGN first.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yes, as Dane pointed out, I'm a lot like Charlie Day in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia with my red strings, and I'm not a smoker, but the caffeine effect is probably much like the chain smoking he does. He looks very frantic, and he's trying to piece it all together. It's a great, great comedic moment in television. It's much akin to the way I am around this time of year.
Well, here's
those that are interested.
We kind of teased it before we went to the news that we're going to talk about some of the most memorable moments and important moments in Oscar history, and who could forget? I know we all remember being glued to our talkie, right, as we watched Charlie Chaplin get a 12-minute standing ovation, right, when back in our black and white television days. And then also too is, remember Marlon Brando when he refused to accept the, that's when you know you're big, when you can win the Oscar and like you
send somebody else.
I don't have time for that, you know. That's when you know you've totally made it to, you know, like the top level, the elite status, right, in the movie world.
Yeah, that was in 1973 for The Godfather. He actually sent out a young woman by the name of, and I might butcher her name, I'm going to try not to, Sachin Littlefeather. She went out to accept, and the whole speech was her just saying that, you know, Marlon Brando is not going to accept this award on the grounds that he does not appreciate the way that Native Americans have been treated in the film industry. Plain and simple. That was it. And off she went. And it was one of those, you know, very political moments, but to be quite honest with you, very fair moments. Hollywood and the Academy, I have no problem calling them out because I'm not really a part of that industry, hasn't always been great about that. There have been a few films in the last, you know, decade or so that I think have done a good job of bringing that presence to the forefront, especially in this last year, the movie Wind River in particular, and then Frozen River. I know I'm mentioning rivers, but Frozen River was another one with Misty Upham, who tragically, you know, passed away in the last couple of years, but her performance was downright stellar, and I think it should not go unnoticed. She acted opposite Melissa Leo, who did win an Oscar for her performance in that film. So, yeah, I mean, it's the statement in that particular instance that you mentioned, with a little more context and understanding and knowledge of the scenario, other than the fact that it was for The Godfather, I think sort of speaks to the way the Oscars have been called out over the last few years. in particular.
Well, here's the thing, too, and I know Jess is fiercely looking for bumpers that have the Little River Band included in them in order to coincide with the thing. Was that one of the first times where there had been a political, kind of social, kind of societal statement being made at the... Because now it seems like for a lot of these people that... Cause you figure on the acting side, and they've all got, you know, voices in social media, but... You're seeing more and more. It's almost like you're missing something if they're not utilizing the program and their opportunity to make whatever statement they do. You got to figure for an actor, you're typically playing other people, and that whole political statement or your own views on a thing probably not in the script, right? So you have to take these opportunities when you are yourself with a national audience to kind of get your views out there. Is that what you're seeing?
Well, I think that as far as I can remember, most overt or blatant political statements, that was one of the first key ones that I came across or remembered from my recollection. However, there were a few awards actually given, namely in 1940, Hattie McDaniel's Best Supporting Actress, you know, win for Gone with the Wind, being the first black actor to win an Oscar, period. And then secondly, in 1964, when Sidney Poitier won Best Actor for Lilies of the Field, was another one. You know, the Academy has awarded wonderful performances, rightfully so, on many occasions. And I don't want that to be forgotten by the general audience. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's one of those things where it's been lost over time, and they go through phases and cycles, and you can call them out here, but then the next year they rebound, or they do this, or they do that. And then, you know, in the case of 73, I think what Brando was trying to do was just say, look, I don't need this award. I mean, I'm Marlon Brando. Like, I don't need this award. And so that he wanted to make light of a very particular issue, and he did so without causing an incredibly negative scene. He just sent someone to respectfully give a statement. She did, and off she went, and that was it.
Well, it's so powerful, though. I mean, to think about it, that so many years later, it's the kind of thing we all look back as sort of that standard bearer for, and you mentioned it, you know, in kind of a tasteful way to be able to get the message across in a way, and then also didn't kind of, and here's the thing, and you have to be, depending on your career, you're almost obligated, you know, even for yourself and your, you know, general level of success, you're obligated to almost deliver that message yourself. When you're Marlon Brando and you don't even need to do it, you don't even need to be there, because typically he could have said, yeah, okay, well, I'll spend part of my speech talking about the Indians and how they're, you know, they're Native Americans oppressed or not utilized in films. Instead, he doesn't even have to go.
What a better way to do it, though, than send a representative, an actual Native American.
But, you know, you have to be Marlon Brando to not even, because I think just the nature of, you know, actors, and I think when you get to that point, I don't know how you don't show up, you know, or even if you have an important message, you think, well, who better to deliver it than me, Marlon Brando. But when you're like that big, and this is not the later Marlon Brando. What was that crazy movie where he was on an island somewhere with the island of Dr. Moreau?
The island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's a short story, or I should say a novella or a book that a lot of people have read and enjoy, but like the film adaptation just was a huge misfire, and it had great talent attached. It had David Thewlis, it had Val Kilmer, Marlon Brando, you know, like every actor just kind of ended up doing their own thing, and you kind of see how this film did not play the way it should have. Again, misfire is just the word to use for it, but yeah, you're right. It was crazy. It was goofy. It didn't really fit the way that it should have for a man of his talent, or his co-star's talent.
Well, and Blake, the point I was making is that this wasn't that Marlon Brando that was like kind of, you know, later
in aloof.
Yeah, this was like Godfather. I mean, this was like him right in the primest of the prime.
Right. And it was pre-Apocalypse Now, where, you know, his relationship with Francis Ford Coppola, who directed The Godfather and Apocalypse Now, pretty much fell apart. He showed up to the set of Apocalypse Now. You know, we're getting into movie trivia here, but he said showed up to the set of Apocalypse Now overweight, didn't know his lines, did not look the part, did not play the part, did not know how to play the part. And, you know, Francis Ford Coppola, I believe, almost died making that movie. Martin Sheen actually had a heart attack and nearly died making that movie. That movie almost took lives. I think that's what a lot of people need to take away from it when you learn about Apocalypse Now. In fact, there's a whole documentary that was made by, I believe it was Coppola's wife at the time. It was basically his Heart of Darkness, which is a parallel to the story by Joseph Conrad that the film is based off of. And it was taking on this idea of, like, look, we're going to film what's going on behind the scenes, and we're going to show how hard this movie was to make in an authentic location with actors succumbing to these, you know, external forces that were causing it to be such a hard thing. Francis was putting all of his own money. He practically nearly bankrupted himself making it. And the whole, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just this snowball effect of when you make films, I don't think the general audience always understands what directors, writers, producers, actors go through to make them. They are called works of art for a reason, and sometimes there are, you know, exquisite portrayals or excellent direction with brilliant execution or cinematography that is just so perfect, and yet there can be more to it than meets the eye. There can be a deeper story. There can be more conflict that one might know about, and it makes it interesting.
Yeah,
it's not just a thing on a screen. It can be more than that.
Well, because you look at how much time and effort and months, you know, and all of those personalities, and so very little of what is, you know, done. You know, months of work, you know, down to making what is about 2 hours of entertainment. There's always a great backstory, and I think that specifically would be a great separate issue, maybe in a future show for us to, like, you and I to kind of just talk specifically about that movie, because you've got, you know, just a pivotal point in the filmmaking world. You've got so many kind of iconic personalities on the acting side, and of course Francis Ford Coppola. One of the listeners know too is that Blake, you and I are going to be getting a chance, I think it's April 15th or so, to interview. We're going to sit down with him and we're going to talk about that, so we'll have to bring up some of these things as best we can, kind of taking him back down on memory lane as Francis Ford Coppola is here in the Chicago area.
Questions.
Yeah.
Yes. Very much so.
And so here's the thing, too, is as we let you go, and we know that you're going to be getting a little bit of rest, and I know that you're going to be on with John. We want to promote that. You'll be on with our mutual friend John Hansen tomorrow, kind of breaking down all of the predictions and snubs. But for those people who want to keep up with you on a regular basis, all things movies, not just these, but pretty much anything, where can they go?
Oh, the easiest way is Twitter. Find me at Blake Stubbs on Twitter. I love talking about cinema, especially if, you know, I throw out a review of a movie and then you go see it and you want to banter back and forth. You want somebody to bounce ideas off or observations or things you like or didn't like. I'm all about it. I think cinema is a key point of conversation, and I don't want anybody to think just because I say this, that's the end-all, be-all, and that's all I think. If you can help open my eyes or I can help open yours, that's where to find me. So Twitter, at Blake Stubbs. Let's talk movies all the time. I'm all about it.
Yeah, open eyes at all times. So, Blake, thanks so much. Everybody get on board and get with Blake this weekend for sure, and then send your thoughts to him, especially as the Oscars are happening. I'm guessing you're going to be live tweeting as well. So, Blake, thanks, and thanks for jumping on the air tonight.
Thanks so much, and you guys have a great night, and absolutely always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Blake.
Wait a minute, Blake. Are you still there?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Last thing, your favorite game of all time. We're talking about different games. I know Exploding Kittens is not it. It just came out, but what is it?
Are you talking about video games or board games?
Board games. Or some
board
kind of...
Board games.
Yeah.
Okay, I got an easy answer for you. I'm an only child, so when I got to play with family and friends, it was always a treat for me because, you know, I could easily entertain myself with, you know, a Nintendo. But when I played board games, there was a game I played with my family called The Omega Virus. And it was kind of a sci-fi, you're exploring a space station, you're trying to stop a virus from eliminating, you know, the human race, basically.
Same virus Dane has right now.
But it was a board game with a little computer that came and had to sit center point on the game board. And it would sort of direct you where to go, and it would interact with different players based on where they were. It was this really cool, involved, like... You had to. It would take like 10 to 30 minutes to play, but at the same time, it was very gripping. You know, and again, I'm not the most versed person on sci-fi, and I know that there's somebody out there that knows the game I'm talking about, The Omega Virus. It was so fun, and I enjoyed it, and I still have like a mint condition version of it that I've always held on to because I thought, you know what, that's a game I want to keep. And I wasn't one to keep those types of things. But that particular game, a lot of great memories.
312-981-7200. If anybody has a picture they can send, you can text it and you can talk. The Omega virus, of course, you know, Blake Dino, we know this. He couldn't just say Yahtzee, right? He had to say the Omega virus. And it's, and of course, the destruction of the human race was also right. built into the. You gotta keep
I would expect nothing less out of Blake.
Got to keep
actually,
it fun, though. Right? You don't just want to like get to the end of the Peppermint Mountain or whatever, right? You got to. You got to save the world. All right. Thanks, Blake. Get some sleep. We'll talk to you soon.
And you bet. Thanks, guys. Have a-